if we can really decide to own that business value. And I always make a distinction between business value and human value, because as a human,
Cute.
you are 100% valuable and worthy, just as you are if you never get off the couch. You're still 100% valuable and worthy. But what we are talking about today is business value, right? And taking all of that value and turning it into a business and making a lot of money from it.
Welcome to the Business Ownership Podcast, brought to you by Awareness Strategies, helping you navigate the waters between entrepreneurship and ownership.
Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec, and I'm super glad that you're here with us today because I am here with my most amazing guest, Melissa. Melissa, thank you so much for being here with us today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So give us the highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
Yeah. So I am the founder of the Avanti Business Academy for Women. And I believe that any woman can create financial freedom through entrepreneurship. And I started my business almost 19 years ago. It'll be 19 years in March.
Congratulations. It's awesome.
Yeah. And so I have spent my career and my life helping businesses to market themselves and grow and create financial freedom for their owners. So
beautiful. So back then, what got you into business coaching as your thing? Why did you pick that one?
Yeah. So great question. I got my MBA in marketing in New York and worked there and did the whole hustle thing. And then 9/11 hit. And I lived through that experience in New York. And I saw a lot of my neighbors, classmates, colleagues, friends perish that day. Mm-hmm. And it was a real wake-up call for me, as you could imagine. And I really discovered through going through that, that if I go to work tomorrow and I don't come home, I had to ask myself, is this how I want my life to end? And the answer was no. And so I knew I needed to make some changes. And I knew that I loved the work that I was doing, but I didn't love my life and how I was doing it. And so I decided if I was going to pursue a career, it had to be doing it on my own terms. And that really is what spurred me to become an entrepreneur and try something different. So I left New York City. I moved back to my home state of Colorado, and I started my own business where I could have a dog, take two hikes a day, and still do meaningful work and grow a business that was successful. So I've been profitable and making money the whole 19 years. And I decided I wanted to offer that same help to fellow entrepreneurs. I discovered coaching in my own growth journey and couldn't help but want to turn around and help women, because I have a female brain. I work a lot with mindset as well as marketing and business development. So, yeah.
Wow. There was a whole lot of courageous moves going on in that,
right?
That whole scenario. That is awesome. So did you find it harder to start your business back in Colorado again, or was it harder to get a foothold in New York when you were there?
Well, so when I was in New York, it was right at the dawn of the internet boom, and which was super fun. And I was working in the tech industry, working for internet startups and helping businesses get started. And I was normally doing that with a team of people, and I would be in charge of the business. The marketing and business development. And so I was working with a team of people. And when I started my business in Colorado, I was solo. So that was different, right?
Right.
It was different challenges. But I really enjoyed having my own agency, just being able to decide what kind of work I wanted to do. And various challenges, but both equally fun.
Thanks. So life has blossomed, and we will get into that in a moment. But now, who do you work with servants for? You mentioned women entrepreneurs, but who do they have kind of something else that binds them together? Are they industry, or are they kind of problem that you're solving concentric. Yeah. Is that English? You can take that any way you want. What are you working with now?
Yeah, I work mainly with service-based entrepreneurs and women, because I, as a young person, I've basically been working my whole entire life, right? And I always wanted to have my own financial freedom, because I was raised in a household where my mother didn't work, my grandmother didn't work. They were my two greatest influences as women in my life. And my grandmother would always tell me, you always need to have your own purse. And I saw that lived out because they both had to ask their husbands to spend money, right? And that never sat well with me. So I knew that I always wanted to create my own money so that I could make my own choices. And I've done that. And I've done it in a way that also, like I told with my 9/11 story, right? That balances out being able to work and have a fulfilling life in your work, but also have the balance of not having that take over all of your life and relationships. So, yeah. So
I've noticed a difference in kind of the younger generation to an extent, but I still see it as an issue that women and making money, I don't know how, is still a thing. Why? Yeah. One, why is it still a thing? And two, what kind of things can you do to overcome that?
Yeah, I think what I see a lot of the women that I talk to, a lot of the women that I work with, is they really don't embrace the business value that they have inside of them. And they downplay. I think that's culturally, a lot of times we're raised to downplay and to undervalue. And so I think that's something that I work with a lot of my clients on, is really seeing the value of the work that they do, not just the tangible value of the thing that they produce or the service they provide, but the intangible value. And that uniqueness is so, and the exact way that they do it is like no one else, and is the reason their clients fall in love with them.
So I know a lot of marketing says you got to make it tangible, got to make it tangible, got to make it tangible. How do you make that tangible? And they're like, I don't know. My clients are just happy. I just have happy clients. So how do you bridge that between they make very happy clients, and some of them really don't affect necessarily the bottom line. They're not affecting a dollar sign. They're not affecting something that is tangible. How do you reconcile that with marketing?
Yeah. So obviously you have to have a tangible product that someone's going to pay you for, but it all comes down to value for me. Mm-hmm. And knowing what your client values. Like I think of my client that is a college consultant, and she helps students and their families find the best fit university and then get accepted there. So she can help them fill out the paperwork and this and that and the other thing. But there's also this intangible value of being able to be the driver of a process for a family that has no idea. It's a very, not secretive is the wrong word, but it's a
nebulous.
Very nebulous. Thank you. We're going to help each other with this English language today.
Absolutely.
It's a very nebulous, confusing process, right? Yeah. And so part of the work she does, yes, she helps them, you know, do the applications, the standardized testing, pick out courses and things like that. But the intangible part of that is really helping the student to get to know themselves and what they really want in a college experience. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, I never asked that question when I decided on university, right? I was just like, oh, what's the best one I can get into? You know, with exactly. These awful SAT scores. And so it might not be something that the student or even the parents think about until they begin working with her, right? Mm. And so for her to really understand that value and bring that intangible value out in her communications, in her marketing, it's helped her to really grow her business exponentially.
Nice. Well, I love it. And I can't help but think of Apple. And Apple made its foray into the industry through understanding that people were artists, which is clearly not tangible. I mean, they took a very tangible product and they marketed it in a very intangible way. And it became one of the best marketing stories out there. And it just kind of makes me wonder if so many women have these intangible qualities, they have the story, they have the emphasis around kind of what growth process their clients come out of it. Why isn't there kind of a way for them to be able to look at Apple and go, okay, I got that. I can make that in my experience. Right. I mean, even in this example, to be able to take college students and have them thinking, oh my God, I got like a 2.08 on my SAT. Like, how is this going to get me into the college of my dreams? You know, Harvard, here I come. Not. And then to be able to draw that picture of them being able to go to college or university and being able to pursue those dreams and those accolades. And it is, to me, the people with the dreams. Like, I can all of a sudden, just talking that, I'm going, oh, I can see that video playing out. Yeah, that can work.
Yeah.
So, and I still want to kind of drill in this. Why is it so hard for women to be able to maximize that? And they should be making a ton of money. I have always said men are more fun and they should stay home with the kids and play. And women are so serious and like, you got to do your homework. You got to get this. You got to wake up at this time, go to bed at that time. Why aren't we in charge of business? It actually makes more sense to me.
Right. Yeah. That's such a great question. And I think if I had the one right answer, I too would be, you know, extremely wealthy. And it's a lot of different things. I think as women, we have a much more holistic view of life, of career. And so we are not as, I don't know, this gets into a lot of generalizations, right?
Of course.
A lot of stereotypical.
I'm kind of asking you to, though. So it's okay. Kind of nudging you that way. I really think that if we have this conversation, then we can kind of nudge women to go, you know what? You have the magic sauce. You have the story. And that's all you really have to do is put that out there and make it the thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, they've got to go and talk to Melissa first to be able to get that out. But that inkling, that notion of, you know, have you ever just sat in a cafeteria and talked for 3 hours? Well, clearly you have something to say then. clearly there's something going on there. People are intrigued if they can sit around for 3 hours and talk to you. So how can we tap into that? And, you know, next step, whether they're running the college SATs or they're, you know, running a bricks and mortar retail outlet, Etsy, it doesn't matter what it is. That story is the thing that people are buying. How do we harness that?
Yeah, I think it all starts in what you're thinking about yourself, right? Mm-hmm. That women, if we can really decide to own that business value, and I always make a distinction between business value and human value, because as a human, you are 100% valuable and worthy, just as you are if you never get off the couch. You're still 100% valuable and worthy. But what we are talking about today is business value, right? Mm-hmm. And taking all of that value and turning it into a business and making a lot of money from it. And so what I see is it's all in how we're thinking about our own business value. And I think it comes a lot, for me personally, it's come a lot out of being raised up in the educational system, in my business education, around kind of that corporate culture, right? And that we have to almost fit in order to succeed. But what I have found and why I'm so passionate about helping women is that your uniqueness and the unique way that you do things, your one in a billion way that you do things, is your business value. So you don't have to do business like a man. You don't have to do business like, you know, Michelle or Melissa. You're going to do it in your own way and own that and stand in your power in that and have your own back. I think oftentimes we don't have our own back, right? We make a decision and then we wheel back on ourselves and sabotage ourselves, right?
But I think it was Napoleon Hill and said, just make a decision, then make that decision right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, it's hard, but that's really what we need, is to have that, that appreciation for our own selves and our own uniqueness, and realize that when we apply that to something our clients want, that's where the magic and the money is.
Nice. So when you're working with women, what does that look like? How do you help them to draw that out?
So we really start out with, and I've been doing so much work this year on myself and with my clients around envisioning your future. And what do you really want, right? And it starts with that, like Simon Sinek, start with why. We go back there. And why? Why do you want to do this? And we know from the research that women start businesses because of a passion and a mission that they're on, right? They, and maybe that's part of it too. They start more with mission and less about finance, right? But we can have both. And so I always start with, what do you most want and why? And really get to the crux of that, because that's what's going to motivate us and keep us moving when the times are hard.
Nice. And do you, in your experience, is it mostly kind of people's family that they're basing that why on, or is, can it be mission driven of, hey, I want to help the world, or, you know, I want to wake up in the morning and know that I've changed somebody's life? Or is it like, what have you noticed is the trend for most of your clients?
A lot of it comes out of personal experiences, something that happened to them or something that happened to someone in their family. I think of my client, Sydney, who was a, or is, she's still around. I'm not talking about her in past tense, but in present tense, she is a woman of color. Harvard and Stanford educated, went to Harvard Law School, became a lawyer, and got there and learned she didn't like it. She didn't want to be a lawyer. But what she did gain in all of that experience of getting into Ivy League schools, she gained the experience of knowing how to get into Ivy League schools. And so that's what she helps her clients do now. And so, and she really strongly believes in helping create access for minority and marginalized populations. And so that's what she built her business around, because of something that she really believes in. And that's what gets her out of bed in the morning.
Nice. Yeah. So once they have that foundation, they go, okay, I know what my why is, I know why I'm doing this. And the business kind of at least has some foray into being able to express that. Yeah. Then do you mold the business and the mission together? Or do you sometimes change the trajectory of the business? How does that look?
Yeah. So we set a goal. And when I think about goals, I think about a goal as an aim. You know, a lot of people think about goals as something to beat ourselves over the head with, right? Mm-hmm. But what I like to think of a goal is, okay, which direction are we heading? What are we aiming for, right? And a goal is not just financial. I love using money as a goal, but also it's like, what is the experience you want to have in your business and your life, right? Because if I have a goal to, I don't know, make $100,000 this year, for example, mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways I can do that. But if I want to do it with the business that I have, that's, you know, the work I want to do. But then I, how is it that I want to experience that? Like for, you know, many of my clients, a client I'm thinking of in particular, she has kids at home, right? So she wants to be able to do her work when, you know, after the kids leave and before they get home from school, so that she's available for her children. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about goals in that way. And then we put together a plan of how that can happen. Like, what's the nuts and bolts? How many clients do we need to have? How much are we going to charge for them? And then we back into, okay, if we want to create, I don't know, 20 clients a year or whatever, then how are we going to do that? How many sales conversations do we have to have? And we put together a detailed plan, which includes the marketing and the finance. And then we go about actually implementing it. and then measuring our progress all along the way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something I see a lot of entrepreneurs miss out on, is the evaluation piece and the learning piece from the implementation, because that's what hones us in and gets us to that goal.
Well, absolutely. And it's usually the first five times they do it and they go, oh, okay, I have three people showing up. This is awesome. Build a business off of this. When that comes along, and in my experience, inevitably, at some point it comes along, whatever their level of disappointment is, eventually they hit that. When somebody hits that wall of disappointment, like, hey, this just isn't working the way I thought it was going to, how do you kind of sit down and either reassemble the pieces and or like move forward, garner that ambition up again to be able to set them on the races again?
Yeah, it all starts with evaluation. All starts also with realizing, because often when we get into those places, we're like, nothing's working. Everything's going to hell in a handbasket, right? We're very exactly. All or nothing thinking.
The universe just collapsed on me.
Yes, everything. Yes. The economy is going to the crapper, whatever. But we just have to interrupt that pattern and remember that there's a lot that's not working. Yes, we'll just admit there's things that are not working, but there are also things that are working, right? And so we start with evaluation. What is working? What can we celebrate, right? Then we look at what's not working. Where are our greatest opportunities, or what do we want to see grow? And then we look at what are our greatest lessons and what we want to do different. What do we want to change up, right? So, and coming up, even if it's just with three ideas that we want to try, it gives you the pathway, right? It's all about that pathways thinking. Like, there's always a path of a couple things we can try. So we go out and try those and do it all over again.
Nice. So in a moment, I'm going to ask you another example of a Cinderella story. But before I do that, we're going to take a little pause.
Are you running a business over seven figures but still struggling with technology headaches? Pay attention. You do not want to miss this offer. This podcast episode is brought to you by Awareness Strategies, who is offering a custom-built digital adoption roadmap for anyone running a business over seven figures who's wanting to grow their business in the next 5 years. And it's not just a roadmap. They offer full implementation as well. If that scares the out of you, check out awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap for more details today. The link's in the show's notes. Don't regret not doing this. Do it now. That's awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap.
I am extremely excited to hear about a Cinderella story. I know we already heard of one, and that was great. And you might want to kind of give us any nuggets on that one and give us an example of a Cinderella story of one of your clients.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you more about my client, Sydney, that went to Ivy League college or university, became a lawyer, and then decided she didn't like that. She started helping other students to get into university, mainly minority and marginalized populations. And in her first year, well, she'd come out of, you know, being in a big law firm. So she was used to making a lot of money, right? So in her first year in her business, she only made $13,000.
Oh,
yes. Ouch. And so that's when we met and she decided to work with me. And so after that first year, we got her business organized, her marketing organized, got her on a good system of bringing clients in. And she finished that first year well over 120K. And yay, I know.
That's awesome.
I know. And then she really got the fire under her booty and moved on and created, I think it was 324 the next year, 324,000. Yeah. And then decided to branch off and start a software company and develop a piece of software. And she was able to get venture capital funding for that, which for a woman of color is almost unheard of, unfortunately.
Wow.
And she started a nonprofit and she's just gone on to do some really amazing things. So I'm so
proud. Sydney, that's awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations to you too. It's always nice when your clients succeed.
I know.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that. Hey, and so if somebody's in the in the throes of their starting their own thing. It's not working the way they want to. What other stumbling blocks might somebody have that's listening to this going, oh, Melissa, I need you so badly?
Yeah, what I often see is when clients come to work with me, they're often in a place where they know their business is a great money-making venture. Like they've established that it's a viable business, right? And so money's starting to come in, clients are starting to come in, and they really want to streamline and simplify. And that's part of the work that I do with them. We streamline and simplify their marketing. I help them with cash forecasting. And really understanding their numbers, both marketing-wise and financially. And we really start to put a structure that's simple and manageable for them and their life and the team that they have or don't have at the time so that they can really optimize what's working and simplify or eliminate things that aren't working and create a joyful business that they actually enjoy working in and not having to work all the time. So
love it. So I know our listeners are going to want more from you. How did they start that journey with you?
Yeah. So my website is a great place to start, which is melissamkellogg.com. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes. I also have a podcast, the Doing Business Like a Woman podcast. And so those are really great places to get to know me. And you can also obviously always book a call with me right there from my website.
Nice. I love it. We will, of course, have all of Melissa's links in the show notes. So go ahead and click on those. Open up in a new browser because we're not done yet. I do want to talk about the Women Doing Business podcast. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So I thought about doing a podcast for about 4 years before I actually got up the guts to do it. And so when I started it, really the whole impetus behind it for me, number one, was just to learn to trust my voice and to start sharing my ideas on a larger platform, right? And I wanted to really help women to see that and teach them and inspire them around developing a business that is for them, that works for their life, and that they can do business in a way that they uniquely want to do it, that they don't have to do it like a man. They don't have to do it like the business gurus or, whoever they may be following. They can create their own thing. And so I just wanted to encourage them to do that.
Nice. I love it. And when it comes to the business coaching side of things, do they just connect with you and go, hey, I'm interested in looking at what you got going on? Or kind of do you have levels? what does that structure look like right now?
Yeah. So a great way to really get to know my work is to come and join me for a class. I do classes regularly throughout the year, at least 4 times a year, classes and online group experiences. So that's a low cost, really great way to get to know me, sometimes free way, and then have a conversation. And we can talk about how I can help you, where you want to go with your business, and really give you some clarity around the best next steps.
Nice. Love it. Now I get to ask you a question, and you alluded to it during the 9/11 kind of period. I'm wondering if it happened or if there were any seeds or nuggets before then. So I'm going to ask you, at what point in life did you know you're a special kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur? Were there any nuggets of, you could do this like before that?
Yeah, actually, when I was 15, I had a paper route with a friend of mine. And the way our newspaper ran, hired kids to deliver papers was, well, at that time, it was an afternoon newspaper. And it was almost like a business. So we had to buy the papers from the newspaper, and then we had to go out and collect the subscription fees from the families that we delivered papers to. And so that was kind of my first, opportunities to learn about having a business. And I loved it. I loved it from the very beginning.
Nice. I love it. You've been absolutely awesome. Any last words for our peeps?
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so great to get to talk to you. And I just encourage everybody to don't stop believing, don't stop trying and going for it, because if your success is always just beyond that next corner, right? Just keep going.
Love it. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I appreciate it. And I know how valuable your time is.
Thank you.
Awesome. Peeps, this is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for being here with us today. Be sure to subscribe to the show and share with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow.